Welcome to the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. I'm your host, James Renford Powell, author of the Renford books and the one you're most familiar with, The Laws of Material Wealth. The Laws of Material Wealth is more than just a book. This is a personal development program. It's a book, a workbook with five exercises per chapter, four DVDs, one of which, the first of which, you can go up to youtube.com and type in Renford Broadcast Network, R-E-N-F-O-R-D, Broadcast Network, and you can view the first DVD to give you some idea about the program. And you'll be welcome to do that. There are six different sections on the YouTube site. It's quite a large site, and we welcome and invite you to come in and look at that. Tonight, if you're listening to the show on the phone, and you can do both, if you've got anybody who would like to listen to the interview, my guest tonight is Sherman Brown, and he is really the epitome of what I'm talking about with the Laws of Material Wealth. And what I'll be talking about in tonight's Renford Revelations blog is individual responsibility, and he has quite a story to tell, and we'll be talking to Sherman. He's from Memphis, Tennessee, and he's written a book, A Bullet in Me, and says he had to learn the hard way, and if you got a bullet, had to take a bullet, you're learning the hard way. He is a successful businessman now and is now focused on helping others realize financial success and happiness, doing something they love to do. And we'll be talking about how you can realize success you want, even if you do not have a lot of capital to begin with. And Sherman is really quite an example of that. If you would like to listen to the show, or if you've had friends that would like to listen to the show and maybe they're not online, don't have a computer, or on the road, they can call in on 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. And press the 1 button if you want to ask a question. Anytime you hear something there, you want to ask a question, just press that 1 button, and that will flag me to bring you in to ask your question of my guest, Sherman Brown. Now, we're going to start with the blog. That's the Renford Revelations. The blogs are available at www.iam-cor.org. That's iam-cor.org. And then after that, put a // blog, B-L-O-G. And then you'll be into that section with all, you don't have to go actually into the main website. You're welcome to go into the website. This is the virtual campus of the Institute of Applied Metaphysics. You can see the three degree levels of study, the courses that are offered, the texts that are used. There are three books you can download, e-books you can download free. So we'd love to have you come and visit us. But if you want to just check on the blogs, make your comments on any of them, you go to iam-cor.org/blog, and you'll be in there. Tonight's Renford Revelation is called Individual Responsibility. Where did our churches and the general population get the idea that individual responsibility is easy? Jesus did not teach a soft, easy way. He said, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me." He was saying this way is easy because if we are seeking to escape the invariant universal principles or laws, there's no way at all. At the same time, he didn't say that our choices will always be easy. He said, "Take my yoke." Who wears a yoke? Beast of labor. This indicates that his yoke requires work. He said, "Learn of me." What did he teach about learning of him and finding the kingdom? He taught work on self. He said, "Straight and narrow is the way, and few there will be who will find it." Work, search, study, yoke, and do. These are all words of action. It is simply not possible to stop the slide of society without starting with each individual self. It is not possible to rectify the wrongs we see without establishing in the minds of each individual the fact of his or her personal responsibility. How do we avoid a mindset that leads to reactionary thinking and confused ethics? When relative thinking is removed from the picture long enough to see clearly the universal truths, right thought can be formulated. Relative thinking is fear-based and reactionary. With right thinking, we can begin to work on a problem effectively. We create with thought. We have proper perspective. We can know that what we have created in thought exists, believe it will manifest, and that it will do so through our actions. If we were all working on ourselves, we would of necessity love, give, teach, and benefit society as a whole. How do we recognize faulty thinking that feeds unstable ethics? When a proposition for salvation is presented that sounds easy, it has popular appeal. We say it is a beautiful system that God has created for us. The man says, I'm in sin now, and even God knows how weak I am. He isn't blaming me. I'm not responsible for my condition. Adam did it. All the good I do in the world isn't going to get me the kingdom. Thinking is tough. God does it for me. Jesus did all the dirty work by sacrificing himself for this unworthy world. If I revere him, all I have to do is live the best I can, sin as little as possible, and I'm home free. Now, that's one way to look at it. We cannot escape personal responsibility for what we've done. We can ask forgiveness of those who we've harmed. We can make amends and work to balance the books. But no matter what we do, we still are personally responsible for the harm we've done. A murderer, even if he confesses in court and is found legally not accountable for his actions, is still responsible for them. There's no one else. This fact of responsibility cannot be taken away by anyone, and is not a responsibility for which Jesus can or would take. It is the murderer's responsibility, and to begin work on himself and ever balance the scales of justice for his soul, he must start with this recognition. Only through the law of balance and equalization is there a system of complete and perfect justice. Only through this law can the soul make amends for the crime, and only through this system can the soul evolve and unfold. This principle, which we readily accept in scientific terms as cause and effect, when it comes to physical matter, is no less true in the subtle form concerning soul, spirit, or life force. All the universal principles or laws find expression in natural laws. When we can understand the perfect justice of these principles, realize our purpose for existence, and exercise the power innate in all us, things become clear. We can see with our eyes, hear with our ears, and understand with our hearts. Understanding with the heart comes through understanding with our minds, with our reasoning. Come, let us reason together is the biblical admonishment. Understanding is our purpose. It is all we can take with us, and it is all important to gain as much as possible in this cycle of life to maximize our potential. Each of us has put in place the basis of our soul's growth. Each experiences what he must. It is our purpose to reason, to learn, and create the circumstances most needed. There are no accidents. All is subject to the law of evolution and unfoldment. This does not mean that God is somewhere out there separate from us, predetermining everything for us. All that we attract to our learning experience is brought to us by the choices we make and the situations in which we place ourselves. All the diversities of experience, trials, and achievements of life can be understood through the knowledge of the essence of man and his evolution, his unfoldment through the stages of his continuing existence. The first step in the process is the acceptance of responsibility for our situations and the choices we make. If one recognizes that philosophy, like science, has been a process of trial and error, then we would know that to have truth, one must discard deficient philosophical thought as one discards a previously accepted scientific truth proven wrong. Philosophy is accumulated knowledge, and if that accumulated knowledge is correct, the philosophy is as perfect in its truth as the scientific law is perfect in its objective truth. Ethics cannot stand alone without a philosophical base because our rules of behavior are tied to our philosophy of life, whether religious in nature or based upon reason. If our reason is faulty or our religion is based upon the warped understanding of God that has come to monopolize religious thought and ethics, we cannot hope to solve the crisis of human ethics. Each thought creates constructively or destructively, one way or another. Creation is going on. Fear-based thinking has created the destructive results we see today, and love-based thinking in harmony with universal laws will create the kind of world we are capable of imagining. And that is my Renford revelation for this evening. Now I'd like to get to my guest, Sherman Brown. Sherman has written a book called The Bullet in Me, and he talks about how he came to be shot in the face, what he was doing, how he was living, the parentage that he had, how he grew up, and specifically in poverty and with both parents indulging in drugs. So Sherman had to fend for himself from an early age, and he was entrepreneurial, even in the drug business at a very early age. So he took this to a higher level, and we're going to talk to him about his experience and where he's going from that point. Thanks for being with me on the show tonight, Sherman. Are you with me? Can you hear me?
I hear you great. You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine. Thanks for being with me on the show tonight. Can you give us a little background from what your early stage there for a Bullet in Me? Tell us a little bit about how you've come along this path.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for inviting me on the radio show to share my story. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
Great. When I was 18 years old, when I was growing up in school, my mom was on drugs. My father was on drugs, and my grandmother, she had 15 kids, and so I couldn't be that special child. And we all lived in a 3-bedroom house, probably about 800 square feet, and my bed was a coffee table. And I got tired of wearing the same old clothes at school. So I went to the office and told the principal that I had the pink eye. And I knew that if I had the pink eye, it's contagious. So they let me go. And I knew when I left that day that I wasn't coming back to school. And, I just turned around and I just left. And as I left school, I ran into I moved with my uncle, great uncle, and him and his wife had a truck wagon business, and I stayed with them, and, I met a friend of mine who was selling drugs, and, we got to be good friends, and we did that. And, he was playing with a gun one day, and when he was playing with a gun, he didn't intentionally meant to shoot me. He was running through the house, and he ran through the house, and I got in the bathroom and shut the door. I thought he was gone. And
Sherman, your voice has your volume level has dropped quite a bit. Could you check your equipment there?
Yeah. What about now? Is it better now?
Yeah, that's better. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. When a friend of mine was playing with a gun, and when he put the bullet in the gun, we started running through the house, and we was on marijuana at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran in the bathroom. I shut the door. And after I shut the door, I thought he was gone. And after about 20 seconds, I opened the door. When I opened the door, he put the gun through, and because he put the gun together, the trigger was very loose. So he barely touched the trigger, and the bullet went off. And the bullet went through my tongue, and it lodged in the inner part of my neck.
Mm.
And, and it was a 38. And we went, and by the grace of God, it didn't come out of my neck. We went to the fire department. They took me to the hospital. And, it went from there. But, yeah, that was a trying time in my life.
Well, that's
very much trying time.
With a bullet in your tongue and going through your neck, it has not kept you from being an eloquent speaker. I've heard you speak on a couple of occasions about your process and have enjoyed that. How long were you involved in that respect with the drug thing? You were 18 at that point?
Yeah, I was 18. I never was like the big drug dealer. I only sold enough to give me some pants or give me a shirt. I was kind of afraid of selling drugs.